The advantage of going last is there's things that I don't have to say because people have already said it, and the disadvantage is that I don't have a lot of time if we're going to have discussion. I'm going to talk fast, and I'm going to skip through some things, so bear with me. First, I have no relationships to disclose. I can skip the background on the oil spill. We know that already. So the Gulf long-term follow-up study was part of the NIH response to the April 2010 oil spill disaster. It was designed specifically to fill gaps in our scientific knowledge on health effects of oil spills and additionally to address public concerns about potential health effects related to the oil spill. This study had extensive oversight during the protocol development, and in addition to the usual IRBs and OMB, we had extensive opportunities for public input and scientific peer review. We became involved in thinking about research in June, and 7 months later, we were ready to go in the field, which is, I think, a record. Unfortunately, it was actually too late. 7 months was too long to address some of the acute health concerns that people might have had. The spill had ended in terms of the active spill, and our focus has then turned to longer-term health effects. We focused on cleanup workers because they had the greatest potential opportunity for exposure to oil and other chemicals, and also because there were lists that we could be working from to identify people with exposures. So you've heard that there are many challenges in thinking about research related to a disaster, and from my perspective, the number one thing issue was that the NIH, at least from the research side, has a very limited role in disaster response, which meant for us that we had lack of access to workers and work sites and documents for a long time as we were designing the study, and in many ways, we were designing our study in the dark. Disaster response, as it should be, focuses on mitigating damages. There were some attempts to collect information on workers. NIOSH had a voluntary rostering of workers, and as you heard, the worker training program captured some information, but there was limited standardized information on workers and no baseline health data or biologic samples, which will come back to be troublesome as we try to interpret results of the study that I'm doing. And the important thing to keep in mind is that there are few people who are oil spill cleanup workers before the oil spill. So in thinking about designing the study, there was no ideal comparison group. And the people who worked on the oil spill were also exposed at home. And they were exposed both to potentially to feeling like they were exposed to the oil and all of the psychological, psychosocial issues related to being part of a disaster also pertain to the workers. So community factors need to be taken into account, and you already heard about the vulnerability of this community for prior exposure to Hurricane Katrina while we've been working on the oil spill, Hurricane Isaac. Many factors that will possibly enhance their vulnerability to any effects from being part of this oil spill, and also have these experiences have impact on people's willingness to participate in research. We often hear that people want health care. We need health care before we participate in research. So the Gulf study is a prospective study. We initially were very ambitious that we would be able to get 50,000 people enrolled into the study. We've lowered our sights as we've learned more about the community and are trying to get 35,000 people to participate in the study. These are people who are actively involved in oil spill cleanup, as well as people who took the training and maybe didn't get hired or supported the effort in some other way. We began enrolling in March of 2011, and we hope to finish recruiting the cohort at the end of this calendar year. We did start recruiting from lists. We cobbled together lists from various sources, and we ended up with about 150,000 names of people who were potentially involved in some aspect of the oil spill. And unfortunately, more than half of those names had incomplete contact information associated with them, or the information was collected, but by the time we went to find them, the phones weren't working. One of the things that we've learned, our cohort is young and mobile and underemployed, and so they use cell phones where you pay as you go, and so by the time we went to reach them, they no longer had phone coverage. So we have added an outreach campaign trying to get people to call us. The cohort enrolled by completing a telephone interview on jobs and symptoms and health. We have these sub-cohorts where we're studying them more intensively. We have an active sub-cohort that gets a home visit. We hope to complete 14,000 of those home visits with workers from the Gulf states by the time we finish in April 2013. When we go to the home, we make some clinical measurements. We measure blood pressure and lung function. We collect biologic samples. We do offer a small incentive to participants, and we recently added actually a drawing where people have a chance to win a $500 gift card. We've awarded three so far, those proving to be very popular, but I can't say they've had an impact on our response rates just yet. We have another group that we've identified who will be studied more intensively, get a comprehensive clinical exam where we will do more comprehensive measurements on respiratory function, neurologic function, and so on. We expect that group to include about 4,000 people. We're going to focus on Alabama and Louisiana and hope to start pilot testing that soon. The cohort is followed through vital statistics and cancer registries. We hope we'll be able to stay in touch with them. We have no idea if that's going to be feasible. The active sub-cohort will be followed through telephone interviews every couple of years. So what we're looking at does come from some scant research on previous oil spills and also from studies of relevant occupational cohorts. We've also over time modified our instruments to address the things that people who are workers from the communities care about. Our focus includes measurements of physiologic and biologic effects from the oil spill, including respiratory disease and symptoms, neurologic symptoms, and genotoxic effects, and also effects due to disaster-related stress. So where are we? We've enrolled more than 30,000 participants so far and completed 8,000 of our home visits. We've got 7,400 potential more people who've agreed to the visit but haven't completed it yet. Now, we have about 5,000 people or 6,000 people on our list who when they signed up, indicated they do not speak English. We began interviews in Spanish in July and have completed 665 Spanish interviews to date. We also added a Vietnamese survey in August. Now, the Vietnamese community is culturally very different, and our regular processes don't work for them, so that what we're doing with the Vietnamese is an abbreviated interview where we characterize their jobs during the oil spill because there's no written record of what they did, and focus on their current symptoms, and we've done over 800 to date. What surprised me is about 20% of the people who worked on the oil spill don't come from the Gulf states. Most of the people come from the four Gulf states, Alabama, Florida, Mississippi, and Louisiana. We have a few who came in from Texas, and almost 20% who came from throughout the United States. So these people, throughout the United States, people are being covered through the phone interviews. And of course, our active sub-cohort is all in the Gulf. The people report a variety of jobs. Many of them had multiple jobs during the oil spill. Clearly, most people had some opportunity to be working on land, cleaning up tar balls on beaches. Almost half had some experience on a boat. You'll notice that the people on barges, rigs, and other are underrepresented to date. Actually, there weren't that many relative to the workforce that was cleaning up on the beaches. This is the group that we're trying to go after now through an intensive media campaign. Rig workers and source workers had the highest potential for exposures, and we are working to get them into the cohort. The cohort is young and male, which is an epidemiologic nightmare in terms of participation rates and responsiveness. They are, as you've already heard, you know, these were people from the community, so education levels are low, income is low, 20% are still unemployed, and 70% were in the Gulf at the time of Hurricane Katrina, many of whom had to evacuate, so whatever impact that had on them pertains. 18% are reporting fair or poor health to questions on our survey, and 28% report that their health is worse now. And now is, for some people, 2 years after the oil spill. The cohort has a number of adverse health indicators. They're overweight, they smoke. And prior to the oil spill, many of them were diagnosed with hypertension and depression. We find, as you've already heard, a high level of distress in the community about the oil spill, about their finances and their health. I have never done a study like this before, where our number one concern is that we have calls, we have distress calls. It seems like every Friday somebody needs to be connected to suicide hotlines, or we're on the phone with police because of emergencies. There's a high level of untreated health care in the community. The people live far from the available free care that they could get. We have 66% of the people that we examine in the home have blood pressure that's measured outside the normal range for blood pressure, and disturbingly, 40% of these were previously diagnosed but just unable to do anything about it. And of those, another way to look at this is that of those who were previously diagnosed, 20% have blood pressure that's outside of the normal range. And in fact, about 1% of our home visits have to be aborted because we can't do a pulmonary function test and we need to send them for immediate medical care because their blood pressure is so high. I just went the wrong way. Okay, so we aren't looking at relationships between the actual jobs or oil spill, oil itself just yet, but we are looking at our data to get an understanding of who our community is. And this is just looking at proximity to residential proximity to the Gulf of Mexico. These are crude data, not adjusted for anything. And there's a fair amount of worry since the spill, worry about paying your mortgage, worry about paying for food, and worry about future health. And as you can see, the closer you live to the Gulf of Mexico, the higher these indicators are. There's also a fairly high level of mental distress, and it's also related to proximity to the Gulf of Mexico. You see, these are standardized scales that we administer either over the phone or during the home visit. And as you might expect, these measures are also related to unemployment. So mental distress is higher among those who don't have a job than among those who do. And we also are asking about a range of symptoms, including symptoms that people brought to our attention. And these, you can see that the prevalence of symptoms is reasonably high and also related to residents near the Gulf. And interestingly, some sort of psychosomatic issues happening where we put in excessive and unusual hair loss as just an indicator of over-reporting potential. We don't expect the oil to have anything to do with that. And that, too, while low, is related to the proximity to the Gulf. So there are many ongoing challenges. You've heard about managing expectations. People want us to do something. They think they don't know what's going to happen if they're in the study, but they hope it's something that will help them potentially get compensation, which is not the case. A lot of misinformation. The legal climate comes and goes. We just had were contacted by a lawyer of representing some Spanish-speaking workers asking us to stop calling about 100 people in their class. The biggest issue is, when do you share results? People want information now, and if we share information now, we could be wrong. People who join the study early may not represent the people who join the study after we've beaten the bushes to get everybody in, and so this is an ongoing tension, and we are doing our best to make people understand the need for us to be systematic, to try to sort out all these things that are going on before we may attribute anything to the oil spill. So you've heard about the key lessons from this and previous spills. We need advanced planning, and we also cannot underestimate the influence of community factors. So I just want to acknowledge all my study investigators and on our team and urge you to go to our websites if you want more information.
Everybody back up. I'm going to hand this. So this concludes the presentation portion, but we're going to have now a discussion, and I invite folks to come up to the speaker with questions or comments for our panelists. And one more time, let's hear for all the panelists here for their great presentations today. This was really a good session.